Hey, After Buzzers, before we move on to your next topic, we just want to say thanks to our sponsor, Anchor. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. Plus, there are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Also, Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. Plus, you can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership, and it's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to Anchor FM to get started.
Hello, Divorce on HBO fans. I'm sad to say that it's the season finale, but I'm very happy to say we have a special guest in studio. Stay tuned.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Yes, the changes. Welcome to the Divorce After Show on AfterBuzz TV. I'm your host, Oriana Leo, and I am joined by an amazing panel tonight and a special guest. But first, to my left, Constance, would you please introduce yourself?
Yes, Constance Dunn. You can join me on Instagram or Twitter at Constance Dunn.
This is Fern Rone. You can find me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat at Fern Rone.
And I'm Lim Gonzalez, and you can find me always at The Poet Saint everywhere, all day, every day.
And I did mention you can find me on Twitter at Miss Oriana Leo, but more importantly, go to my website, Tilt by Oriana, because I'm going to be launching a 30-day challenge in January.
Yay.
And I want you all to be a part of it with me. And our special guest sitting here on the couch is Mr. Robert Forster. Welcome.
Yay. Thank you.
Yeah.
We're so happy to have you.
Yes.
And just giving a little background. Mm-hmm. Robert frequents a restaurant near my home, so I knew he was there. When I saw him on the episode, I just about freaked out and had to pretty much run out and see if he would say yes. And he said yes.
Hey.
Yay. Thank you.
Thank you.
So season finale called Détente, right? So we know what this is about going into it. Mm-hmm. Do we have like kind of top line thoughts about this episode?
I was stunned.
Stunned.
I was very stunned.
I was on a roller coaster.
Okay.
Of emotion.
The end got me. I mean, the end itself, I did not believe that he was going to do that.
Yeah.
I didn't think he was capable, because he has been a little petty, you know, over the course of the season, but it just, I didn't think he was going
to
do
it. Took it to a whole other level. What about you, Robert?
I got pretty serious, didn't I?
Sure did.
And it's an ending to a first season, which, prepares us for what's going to happen next.
Right? Mm-hmm. So unusual to have a show of this topic, right? I mean, it's called Divorce, it's about divorce, and yet I really want to continue watching this. they've really, you know, told a great story, but better, the characters are so real at this point. I really believe them.
Mm-hmm. Right. And there's kind of a meta theme, too, which I don't think a lot of shows are doing, that has to do with the intimacy. Lack of intimacy. A lot of people, we see this with Nick and Diane, people that have spent a lifetime together, even with your character and your wife, that to what extent do you really know somebody?
Right.
Right. And so we see this with Robert and Francis over and over again, right? This is a topic that people grapple with in reality as well. And I think it's something that they're doing very, very compellingly.
So at the top of the episode, we see that Fun Space is actually, it looks like it's actually happening. Like, he put together a decent presentation. Nick is there and is actually, like, he's surprised because he can't figure out how this doesn't work.
Right.
What were your feelings about that scene? Like, did you believe it? I actually thought this was going to happen.
Yes, me too.
It looked like Dave and Buster's.
Exactly.
I was like, I want to go.
Exactly.
That's exactly what I was like. I want to go. I want to go to Fun Space. I want to have a good time. So it was very believable to me.
Yeah, and especially look at how it has lifted Robert's confidence in the preceding episodes. We have seen it's transformed. It's made him a little bit more serious. And I was rooting for him, of course.
And I was fooled to think, like, this is the arc of his character. Like, he's finally going to grow up.
Yes!
His divorce is going to make him mature. He's going to be a completely different person. I was fooled.
I was fooled multiple times about that. I don't know about you, Robert. Did you believe it? Did you believe that this could have been a change? Like, this could have been the thing. This was the thing for him.
To make him an individual and independent?
Yes.
No, my assumption is that he loves her and will never stop loving her, and this will go on for 7 or 8 seasons.
Wow!
Interesting.
Which would be great.
I like that prediction very much.
It's a great prediction.
So we see that that has this meeting with investors, and it does kind of play out throughout the episode of he's there, the phone's ringing, he's not answering it. We get to see the kind of the duality here of these parents that are, they're not being the best parents right now, right? But we see that he's not answering the phone, and then he gets a call. The realtor broker brings him aside.
Right. Mm.
And everything just falls apart.
I think in that moment, it was interesting because I'm thinking, if I was him, and here I am, I'm excited. Right. Everything is going according to plan. I'm trying to move on. I'm trying to make this happen. I'm trying to have this be my own. And then this hiccup happens, and it's a result of the person, like Robert was saying, that I actually love. And I'm having this problem with releasing, but at the same time, it's kind of bringing me in. It was kind of like when we saw the end of last episode when he was serving those papers at the game.
Yep. Yes.
And so I felt for him in that moment because I'm like, he's almost there. And then like, no, it's going to reel him right back.
Yep.
Right. And that's going to compound the fact that, remember, he is a construction business that has not been doing well. And particularly the idea that he is a head of a household, he is a man. And so this has just been one stumble after the other. So naturally, it's going to be combustible at this point.
It was nice to see him. I was like, oh, impressed. Oh, he can do this. Mm-hmm. Like, he's not a total idiot. Like, he has some, you know, some skills. But I mean, it's beautiful. It's beautifully done to see him get his hopes up and to have finally done something. But look what it took.
Mm-hmm. All of that.
All of this to get him to this point. And then, of course, I'm sure it feels like, oh, it's been ripped away from him. Mm-hmm. Right. But what about Frances and her job that she wanted that she couldn't take?
But I think he doesn't really care so much about her because I think he's very self-entitled or self-centered in some degree, especially when we see at the beginning of the season when he's, you know, when she's talking about how many times he had sex. Like, well, I thought it was two. Right. And he's just so upset at that point. You know, you cheated on me. I'm going to take it on you. I'm going to be petty. Mm-hmm. So I really don't think he cares so much about that. I think he's trying to find his own path in this and trying to make it work as he wants. Because we saw the changes kind of happening in the last two episodes. And then now he's at this pinnacle. Mm-hmm. And then...
I think he's been so emasculated by the affair and then by not succeeding in his business. Like, I think he thinks that if he's at least succeeds in that part, then he'll, you know, be considered a success as a husband, as a man, as a father. But I also think it's interesting that when he was served the papers and when he found out about the frozen assets, it was at such a vulnerable time. So in front of his children, in front of future business people, that I was like, did her attorney know when to do this to him?
I think so, absolutely. Yes.
She's diabolical. Yes. She's worse than his attorney, who doesn't even care anymore.
Says the attorney.
Robert,
I agree. I am sure these attorneys create the worst opportunities for tearing people apart. And they're good at it. And as I remember some years ago, I remember a course in Beverly Hills given to women who were considering divorce and how to get their affairs in order and how to give him the worst possible attack when she decided to do it. Yes, I'm sure you'll this is not old, this is not new news.
I'll have to Google.
Oh god, wow. So that's the
given
idea.
By lawyers.
I feel like the lawyers make everything worse. That if they were just going to handle this on their own, they wouldn't embarrass each other. They wouldn't humiliate each other. It would just get done.
Right.
But now it's like
how to extract the most pain possible.
It's just so interesting that we've got the we've got these two people that Robert. I feel like he stumbled into this, right? Because he picked this really nasty attorney.
Totally.
Has not been taking responsibility of like, oh, I had no idea. And, you know. And I think at this point, I don't know what to believe. He plays dumb really well, but he keeps getting himself in these situations that are like, maybe that's what you wanted.
Robert plays?
Yeah, do we believe that, like, I didn't know he was going to go after you like that, you know?
But Tony Silver Creek is like, is in kindergarten next to this chick that Frances has got.
Right.
She's just like, he's, you know, playing in the JV league next to her. And who's this actress, it escapes my name, who plays Frances's lawyer, and she does such a great job. And I love how they do the design as well of her office. It's all chintz, and she's this got this southern lilt to her voice. And it's just like, watch out.
Her office is like Victorian-era-esque. Right. Yeah. One thing I wanted to point out is when we're talking about the attorneys and how nasty they can be, one thing is it wasn't Francine's fault in the sense of she allowed things to happen, but she didn't pick the timing.
Right.
Like, for instance, at the game, and you saw she ran across the court.
Made it so much more awkward.
Right, right. It wasn't her fault. And then even when the attorney this episode, when she says, you know, what are you going to do? She's like, do you want to, you know, it's going to be like this? And she's like, well, it's going to be a heartache.
Yes,
you know?
I love that.
Right. And so she's like, okay. But again, not knowing exactly what's going to happen.
Right.
So he can't really blame, even though he wants to, can't really blame Francine. She's just trying to get this done and move on with her life. But she cares for him. I feel that she cares for him to some degree and doesn't want him to suffer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And she even says that. And with her meeting with the new attorney of, I don't want you to embarrass him. I don't want, you know, and the attorney's kind of saying, well, listen, it's going to happen. Right. Do you want this or not?
Sure.
But I thought it was great too with the design, the how cozy and comfy it felt in there. But this woman is like really dangerous, and so there's this, you know, this lulling you into comfortability, and then being shocked and awed at her behavior. What did you guys think about Tony Silver Creek being actually smart and telling Robert not to go anywhere? Don't go. That doesn't sound like a good idea.
I thought that was interesting for his character, because overall, like, he's been one to be like very quick-witted, but also like very conniving, and very like, I'm gonna get you before you get me. And I think it was a good moment, and Robert needed that. And it was just, I was surprised
that it
came from him.
Mm-hmm. What do you guys think? He was on a date, so I wasn't really sure. It was like, he just brushing this, again, don't do anything, I'll read it on Monday, because he was on a date and he didn't want to deal with it? Or was he doing the right thing? Does he do the right thing?
I think he didn't want his client to be aggressive. Mm-hmm. I think that showing aggression to the other party is unhelpful.
Right.
It's going to hurt him.
So, yes, it's going to hurt him. Mm-hmm. You should not do that.
No, the attorney should be the aggressive one.
Yes.
Yeah.
And don't do that.
Don't do that, he said.
Don't do that. Simple.
Yeah. So we hear the heartache. We hear Frances says, okay, you know, she can deal with it. Mm-hmm. With a 10 being blowjobs for beer money.
Right.
So,
right.
8's probably pretty bad.
Heartache.
And while they're both in their respective meetings, Lila gets hit by a car because somebody forgot to pick them up. Or they were supposed to take the bus.
They were supposed to take the bus,
or, I don't know. This is something I wanted to ask you guys, because Lila pulls out the schedule and she reads it. Mm-hmm. And then when they end up in the hospital and Frances is like, oh, they misread it. And I was like, did they?
Well, okay. So
let's clear this up.
So what I got from it was the son, he was taking charge. And he was like, oh, no, dad's turn. He's going to pick us up. But when they go to their mother's house, they take the bus. Mm-hmm. And so he was saying, no, dad is picking us up.
Oh,
and that's when
she
breaks out the paper and is like, no, but they had already missed the bus.
Right.
So then he's like, well, let's just walk. I'm going to walk. You can come with me.
So
or
on
not.
Mom's nights, they take
the bus. Right. And so because they missed the bus, now they're kind of stuck. And so that's why I felt when she was in the hospital, she said, oh, we misread the schedule. Because generally, that's exactly what they were supposed to get on the bus.
Right. In this scene, though, underscores the idea that we don't really pay that much attention to the kids. They're basically on autopilot. Yep. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing how much that the actions of Robert and Frances really impact them. For instance, we talked about the basketball game with her being with Robert being served with papers. Uh-huh. If you remember at the very, very tail end, and one of our viewers pointed this out in the chat, thank you very much, that actually Lila loses the point. Because it causes a foul. So again,
I didn't notice that either.
And again, it's just like, we're just doing our thing. We're just like going to war, and there's two little beings involved.
Yeah, so that's an amazing pickup.
What an awesome observation. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't notice that either.
There are these effects, and they're being neglectful, frankly. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that it happens probably in every divorce. Mm-hmm. In these situations, it always hurts the kids. Mm-hmm. The nastier they get, the more it hurts the kids. And, you know, we started this season with Robert going, it's all about the kids.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right, and it's so clearly not. Mm-hmm. It's all about winning.
Right.
Right, which sounded like a token line when he even said it. As an actor, he did a really good job.
When you said that, Oriana, I'm curious when we see, and I don't remember exactly when episode, I think maybe the 6th or 7th episode, when he's taking him to church, and he's doing all these things that he's not normally doing.
Right.
What did you think in that moment? Is he just, again, this is a winning thing, or is he actually trying to spend time with the kids and do better?
I don't know. I mean, my personal feeling on it is it's a both. right? Mm-hmm. Is that, I mean, he wants to spend time with the kids, but I think the over, my feeling was that the overarching goal to win.
Okay.
And I am a divorced person, and I can tell you that these things happen of all of a sudden, this person that you're like, I can't be with you anymore because this is not acceptable, all of a sudden is perfect, right? And everything that they were supposed to be doing or that they should have been doing, they all of a sudden do, thinking this is going to save it, but it's completely empty, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what I see in this.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
What about you?
I thought he loved his children. I thought the conversation about the musician and what was going on, I thought he was trying to deliver some of his understanding of music and pass that on to the kids.
Right.
He's been a good parent, although parenting is always haphazard. It doesn't matter how good the parenting is. Mm. It's always, it's never perfect.
Right.
There is no perfect parenting, so you get what you get. I mean, my kids sometimes didn't see me when they were young, and I said, you know, and sometimes we didn't have dough. So we do what we do. When we don't have dough, you find something to do that's good enough. And when we do, then we do it that way.
Right.
When I'm around, we do things. And when I'm not, you do other things. So parenting is always imperfect. Mm-hmm. And but I can see they're trying to be perfect parents.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Here and there.
We find out that, so we see the bedtime stories, which I thought was amazing, of like, he's playing music and explaining all this stuff that his daughter really is interested in, and he has the solidarity patch. Like, I mean, he's really, that's a good dad, right?
Nice.
In that moment, like, that's a really good dad.
Right.
What happens in the rest of the episode? Not so good. But we see that the assets are frozen, obviously. Everything starts falling apart. And then we have the art gallery scene, which is so lovely. And we get to see you. Do we know your character's name?
Yes.
I don't, sorry.
And what is
it? I have this. My notes from a couple episodes.
I always respond to Robert on the set, but then there's two of them.
Yes. With Francis' dad.
Yes.
But it was kind of cute because we get to see the son. What's his name? I'm sorry. Anyone?
Tom.
Gosh, totally off my game tonight. We see him being proud and like sharing his sort of hero story where he had started out feeling like it was all his fault.
Right.
But then, you know, grandpa's being like, you did the right
thing.
Yeah, you did a great thing.
Right. Really great moment there. I don't know. I mean, I made me wish I had a grandpa like that.
Do you draw from, and this is going into, I know we're going to be talking to you a lot, and of course I can't wait to have at you because you've had such a long and interesting career in this business, but as far as your technique, and do you draw from a personal sense of being a father, or do you really have a character that you've created completely separate for this?
Oh, no. I just bring myself to it. I have three daughters.
Okay.
I've given them the best advice I could on being wives and mothers. And there was a point at which they were teenagers, and I decided it was my duty and obligation to tell them what men were about so that they could make decent decisions. And I told, you know, I gave them my sexual advice.
Don't do it.
Oh, no. I remind them that if you were to put all the good things, pile them one on top of another, right at the top is sex. Orgasm is the top thing.
Yes.
And so, if you want to know about that, but you know, there's several things not to do.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
I would love for this to work
out. I just got one.
This is amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, so we move through the art gallery opening, and we get to see a little snippet of each person, right? And we see Diane, because we know what happened last time,
and
she's fallen off the wagon.
Yeah.
So I'm just trying to see, did we pass the grocery store scene? I think that comes a little bit later, right?
I think it's before the gallery.
Before the gallery, thank you. So let's talk about that. We see Diane going through the grocery store. I think, did you guys, I saw this coming at least with the booze.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you saw that coming, kind
right.
of. Like, it's half off. Buy one, get one. They're giving it away. And she literally puts the coconut water back.
That was hilarious.
Takes beers, and then puts the beers, and then switches.
Right.
And just,
amazing. More booze.
And I love that this little child, oh my gosh, how well written was this?
Yes.
You look just like my mommy. And so she's looking, going around the grocery store, trying to find her doppelganger.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And what she finds...
Aww. The snap lady.
Yes.
The actual snap
lady. The actual snap lady. Yeah. Who is not nearly as svelte,
right,
or groomed, mm-hmm, or put together.
Yes.
Or friendly or kind, particularly, mm-hmm, in that,
right,
moment.
Right.
Which we don't know what her backstory is, mm-hmm, but that child didn't want to be with her.
No.
No. And you know what? They really do a good job. This kind of goes to the writers. I think we've been looking at a different, you know, carousel of writers. And this, mm-hmm, last episode was done by Hayes Davenport, who we've seen before, a comedic writer who's here in L.A. Mm-hmm. Also Sharon Horgan, of course, creating the show. Adam Resnick, Tom Sharpling, and Paul Sims. So comedic writers, mm-hmm, in general. That's like, mm-hmm, their background. And they definitely keep everyone in their lane. And of course, it was directed by Jesse Peretz, who directed last week and, mm-hmm, directed other ones, mm-hmm, as well. So, mm-hmm, we had a return of some of the familiar writers and directors, this time, if you've, mm-hmm, been watching that part of the situation.
It just seems like, though, it's the writing's been getting better and better.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And the writing in that scene was hilarious, because she did not care that he found his mother. All,
right,
she cared about was like, you think I look like,
yes,
this?
Yes. Right. Well, we know Diane's pretty self-centered.
Right. Sure. Exactly. She's so true to character.
But so, when she had that touching moment of the child that's waving,
right,
and I'm like, oh my god, she's going to reconsider the whole thing about adoption, and,
yeah,
she's having this
I
twin,
thought that too,
and this,
yes,
moment, and I really thought she's not going to,
yes,
buy the booze.
Yes.
Uh-huh. I thought,
she was still going to buy the booze.
No, I really thought she was going to have this moment of, like, redemption, right? Of,
yeah,
oh, no, I know, you know. And then to see, cut to the art gallery scene, mm-hmm, where, right, one of the first things we see is Nick totally peeved at her,
yeah, mm-hmm,
right, right, about the wine.
Right,
mm-hmm,
right.
Well, that's the whole kind of push and pull of this whole... their whole idea. And, you know, we've talked a lot about the kind of the temperature, mm-hmm, the tone of this show in general. It is that push and pull. It's the comedy. It's the tragedy. It's back and forth. Mm-hmm. A little slapstick in as well.
Mm-hmm.
So. I really thought, though, that she was going to reconsider adoption, mm-hmm, or reconsider having a child.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm thinking, like, oh, okay, she was bonding a little bit with this child. She's going to go back to her, tell her husband, look, I changed my mind, mm-hmm, and all that stuff. And she was like, no,
but hysterical. She said, why would we want to strap a suicide vest on right now? And I was like, wow, that's compelling.
Right. I mean, the comparison is really daunting.
It is. Yeah. And I don't know that it's incorrect, right, in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
But that was pretty amazing. But it made me really feel for Diane, because we know that her self-esteem has been crushed,
sure,
by her husband, who she's been doting after. She feels terrible, mm-hmm, about what she's done. She's really changed her behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And then for him to not pay any attention to her,
right,
and so now she's feeling broken,
mm-hmm,
and now he's angry at her,
mm-hmm,
so there's like this cycle that never,
right,
ends, that we see this in relationships, right,
mm-hmm,
where like something has to give,
mm-hmm,
if it's really gonna change,
mm-hmm,
not communicating,
mm-hmm,
right,
yeah,
so that made me sad to see that.
And right, I feel like the only time they were even working is when he was in the hospital, and then,
mm-hmm,
she had to take care of him.
Yep.
Once he was fine,
yep,
it was like it just went back to normal.
Exactly.
Right.
She wasn't, like, needed.
And that's so much can often happen when there's little catastrophes,
mm-hmm,
and then it's like a honeymoon period, but it doesn't really get rid of the underlying issues that are,
mm-hmm,
still there. And I think, right, did a clever job of that as, mm-hmm, well.
Sure.
Yeah. You have anything to say?
No, I was just listening, and it was, and you seem to have it just about right.
Yeah. So we also, you know, we get to see Dallas, unfortunately, and we only, mm, she has, I mean, her one line was amazing,
yeah,
right? Of reading this review,
mm-hmm,
at Francis's new gallery of the small jewel box of a gallery,
mm-hmm,
featuring local artists, which was really nice.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a real win for her. Like, I felt,
mm-hmm,
like, finally, you know,
mm-hmm,
she pulled the trigger, she did something,
mm-hmm,
that she hasn't been very good at taking initiative,
right,
right,
mm-hmm,
at all, or follow through even, of some of of her plans and goals. So she was really on top of it, and then,
mm-hmm,
for Julian to be there.
Oh, gosh.
That was just such, so weird to
it
have
was
Julian.
Awesome. I'm sorry.
I Google you every night.
That made me laugh. I wrote that down. It also says, it's not easy to tell someone,
mm-hmm,
you've Googled them.
Right.
Do you believe it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, you believe he
has.
Oh,
he's a weirdo.
Oh, okay.
He's a weirdo.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, for sure. But my favorite thing was when he sees Robert and he starts, like, in church shoes. Like, he's,
mm-hmm,
like, booking,
mm-hmm,
down the street. And I'm like, and Robert, I couldn't tell. Did he see him at all? I don't even think he
saw
him.
I don't even
him.
Think he saw him.
But he just sees Robert.
I thought he did, but I would have thought he would have reacted. Like, he
right,
would have
exactly,
chased him if
exactly,
he saw him.
Exactly.
Right. He was so angry.
He was gone. Like, he was like, mm-hmm, I'm out. I thought that was hilarious.
I thought it was great. And I loved what Francis said when he said, can I call you and can I do this? And she's like,
mm-hmm,
do whatever you want.
Right.
Like, I'm not in charge of you.
Mm-hmm.
Do what you want. Like, it was great to see her.
It's amazing how far she's come from episode one.
Right?
In 10 episodes.
Very much. Mm-hmm. And I love when the girls are asking, like, that's him. Right? And she's like, oh, I know, I'm so embarrassed. But that, you know, sometimes we need something or someone. Mm-hmm. They come along into our lives as a gift. Mm-hmm. You know, right. We might be, whatever it is that we choose, it's up to us what we choose. But a lot of the times, I mean, I think it's a perfect example of, it was what she needed to get herself into a better place.
Right, absolutely.
And having Robert come and, you know, did you guys feel it was manipulative straight up front? Where he comes there and he's like, I wanted to see you and I'm so proud of you. And he's laying the groundwork so that he can essentially, you know, hit the nail on the head as far as what she's doing to him.
Mm-hmm. Well, he, okay, so this is my thing. Again, looking into his eyes, I'm like, okay, if I'm going to do what he wants to do, because he wants to be vindictive, he wants to get back at her, I was kind of looking at it as, okay, he's going over there, he's going to do something that's manipulative, but I feel like he got caught off guard, because I don't think that kiss was something that he planned or he thought would happen. Mm-hmm. I think it happened, and he was in the moment, and then he probably was like, okay, abort mission, then gets back, realizes, like, no, once she calls and says, hey, I want the kids, and there's no difference, it's just same old, same old. He's like, oh no, I have to go back to what I want to do. And then he makes that call.
Interesting.
He woke up to make that call.
Yes.
He'd had a good night's or some bad night's sleep.
Right.
Deciding whether or not to.
Well, she fell asleep. She was asleep. Able to fall asleep.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
And when he hits that 911 call, he's been asleep or he has been not quite asleep.
Yeah. Sure.
But it's morning.
Yep.
They're already on the road.
Right.
He's either timed it correctly, or certainly timed it correctly.
Sure.
Right.
And he didn't call his lawyer. He called 911.
Right.
That was an intentional act. And I thought, too, that when he got there that evening and they talked and he told her, it's been you that kept the family together and you supported us. And I thought that was all true, and I'm sure it was.
Mm-hmm.
And however, you get home and you say, but my life has been ruined. She killed me.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
She did that, and she stuck it in my... She stuck me in with a knife twice.
Mm-hmm.
Once at the service at the basketball game, and then...
freezing the account.
Freezing the account.
Yeah.
I can't get on with my life. She really killed me.
Right.
And his lawyer, no doubt, he may have had a conversation with the lawyer. We don't know that. Mm-hmm. But we know that the lawyer was a killer.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And we know the lawyer was in favor of doing that.
Right.
And now it becomes a legitimate war.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Ooh.
Ooh, yeah.
Oh, next season.
Next season.
So we do, Frances does admit to her father.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, and she says it like, I can't not be honest with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I was really happy to see that. Like, she's really moving forward, coming clean, taking responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And what a dad.
Right.
The reaction.
And, of course, he alludes to that it might have happened in his own marriage as well, which is always, like, a nice... It's the idea is brought in it's brought in subtly.
Mm-hmm.
There's a certain art to how that has been put in the last few episodes, if you remember the Christmas episode.
Because the mom made it sound like the father had no idea that she ever cheated on him. And this is like,
maybe
I had a clue.
Yeah, I like how he said that.
Yes, you usually know sooner or later.
Yeah. Well, okay, so real quick, you guys, I think Robert probably would have gotten a good night's sleep if he had Boll & Branch sheets.
Yes, yes.
You know, we bring these shows to you free of charge because of how amazing these hosts are in AfterBuzz is, but we do have sponsors. And so we'd like to talk to you about Boll & Branch sheets, which are the softest, most comfortable sheets you will ever sleep on. That's quite a claim. Mm. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, because the idea is that when you give Boll & Branch sheets, you're giving something that everybody wants but doesn't always get, which is, of course, a perfect night's sleep. So Boll & Branch makes this easy. Shipping is free, and they come beautifully packaged in a gorgeous gift box. No gift wrapping is needed.
Ooh, and they're 100% organic cotton, so you can sleep well on your nice sheets. Get it?
So
everyone loves them, and they're doing free shipping. Is that what I see there?
Yes, they're doing free shipping. Well, also, they are also doing $50 off. So
$50
of course, right. You can also, it lets you sleep on them, so it lets you try them for 30 nights.
But did you hear that even 3 U.S. presidents sleep on Bull and Branch
sheep. Yes, that's the
thing. Well, they must be really good.
We imagine. Quite an endorsement.
Yeah.
Right. And they start out super soft, and they get softer over time, and that has to do with the organic cotton, which I think is rather compelling.
That's amazing. So for our listeners right now, order at ballandbranch.com. That's B-O-L-L and branch, like a tree branch, .com, and get $50 off a set of sheets. Mm-hmm. That's promo code PODCAST1. In all capitals. That'll get you $50 off.
Mm-hmm. So that is bowlandbranch.com, spelled bowlandbranch.com. Promo code PODCASTSTONE.
Podcast one.
Sorry. Bowlandbranch.com.
Thanks, Bowl and Branch. I'm really curious.
I know. We're all curious.
They says they have thousands of 5-star reviews. I'm sure they do.
Right.
But of course, if anyone uses this code, let us know. Tweet us. Right. What do you think of these sheets?
You sleep out of 30 days free and just... send them back if you don't like them. Here you go.
Well, I wonder if has anyone ever done that? Like, taken the full 30 days and they liked it and gave it back?
No. I've done that with, like, subscriptions or something like that.
Free trial.
Yeah, right.
100%.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but sheets you probably do get attached to.
I would think so.
I mean, if they are really that great. So.
Right.
Let us know. If the if we're good enough for presidents, it must be good enough for us. So we've got our finale, right? We have the final scene. Mm-hmm. I loved the juxtaposition of her, you know, Hudson River contemporary, yeah. right? Mm-hmm. She has a finished gallery. Mm-hmm. And then we see Robert in this one of his many unfinished homes that he loses it. He's breaking things. Mm-hmm. Like, he's completely unhinged. At that moment, I was like, is this acceptance? Like, is he coming out of denial?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Like, I actually thought for a minute that he was like, okay, because he keeps reaching out to Francis and he keeps saying the right things. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't go for the jugular.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You know, he doesn't say, you did this to me, and you're... He doesn't do it. And so there's part of me that thinks, oh my God, maybe he's taking responsibility.
Right. And of course, the kiss...
Negative.
And the kids,
we start to get hopeful.
But this is why you get a divorce. It's because it's never going to change.
Right.
That's why you leave.
Right.
This is how it's going to be forever. And so we see him, which I also think is really common, and I personally experienced this, was like, he sinks his own ship, right? She says it very eloquently at the end. But what he has done has crossed the line completely.
Absolutely.
If there was ever any chance of any good coming out of this, it's over.
Yeah. Over. Mm-hmm.
Has now, she crossed the line?
I think the kiss was a little bit confusing, personally.
Well, but on the other side, she's twice served him with papers and killed his business.
Yeah, but I don't think... Well, I would argue that that's how it goes. Mm.
But she went to war first and did it twice. It's an interesting point to ponder.
But she wanted to go to mediation, and he walked away.
Right.
So it's like... You know, she tried to play fair in the beginning, I thought, and he decided that wasn't...
Well, he's the one that got an attorney first.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that it was just kind of like they kept trying to one-up one another. And I think it just came to the point, but Robert just wasn't... he wasn't enough to get to the point where he still wanted... Like, I still feel my boy.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like he really still wanted her. And I think he was doing things like wanting the family to be together and doing all these things. Because essentially, he kind of came to a point where it's like, what am I going to do without her?
Right.
You know, he had already had a tryst with someone and never again, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he just, you know, I just want to let you know I got mine in. But it wasn't like, I'm happy now.
Sure.
It was like, I got it in, but I just did that because you did that to me.
Right.
So I really felt like he really wanted the family back together.
Mm-hmm.
And but because, you know, everything is moving so well for her with the gallery, remember the kids didn't really care for her too much in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
They were more on Robert's side, it appeared.
Yes.
Now they're on her side and they're going to accept her and accepting the situation.
Mm-hmm.
And he's, you know, and now the straw is, you know, now his assets are frozen and fun space can't happen. So I really feel like, you know, I don't put so much on her. I think she was just kind of playing the game as far as how it was going to be played.
Yeah.
And he did that, which I do agree that it was crossing the line.
Yeah. How do any of us, any other reactions?
I think it
about
was
this?
The lowest of the low, just because it involved the kids so directly.
Right.
Like everything else is kind of could have been hidden from the kids.
Or indirect.
Like the kids don't even have to know that she like froze his acid. Like they wouldn't even care not even know what that meant. But this was so
personal,
direct and personal, and involved them and involved the police with them, that and scared them
yes.
that it took it to a whole other low. Mm.
But she had him served at the basketball
she
game.
Didn't. And
she
didn't.
Did. The attorney did.
She okay, didn't do
I
that.
Know, but you
she
know what? I'm going to play devil's advocate a little, and it's not necessarily that even you've just brought up an interesting point, Robert, so I want to... The idea is that there is a point of responsibility when you go in to go to a mega shark attorney, and they're like, and she's saying, so I just kind of give you a check, and then you're just going to do your thing, and that's it? And
but
she's
like,
yes, honey.
He did
this first.
He did this first, and they completely put her motherhood on trial. Mm-hmm. And right. everything he was doing mm-hmm. to was to look good, mm-hmm. right? So, like, what's the difference?
The two mega shark warriors yeah. are going at right. it.
She had to do what she had to do,
they're
in my opinion.
Blameless because they both hired them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. But I think this is so much more visceral. The kids are going to remember this.
Forever. Mm-hmm.
You know, they might remember, mm-hmm. oh, Dad got humiliated at the basketball right. game, which is horrible.
Right.
And I missed my shot. But
right.
Yeah.
right. Our weekend skiing got ruined, and we were, like, in the back of a police car while yeah. they called mm-hmm. Daddy on the phone.
Or
like,
while... we don't even know if she gets arrested. But right. that's what right. she's saying. Is so like, horrible. Your children are trying not to right. cry right. because their mother's being arrested. Yes. Their mm-hmm. weekend has been ruined. And the whole thing of Lila just gets hurt, and she's like... this would be so great to mm-hmm. to bring the kids and get them away. And mm-hmm. he says, yes, yes.
Oh, gosh, that's weird. Mm-hmm. That was odd.
And then to do that, mm-hmm. like, your child just suffered
mm-hmm.
because of your neglect,
he's
right?
McPetty.
That's
his name.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Okay,
and
well...
so, really quickly, yeah. I just think it's so interesting that he said the one thing that he should have said before the affair, before... episode one mm-hmm. in
thank
the timeline
you.
Was you do so much. Like, people
right.
just want to be appreciated. Like,
she said, I've been waiting a very long time very to long hear time. That. Wow. And he said, thank right. you for what you've done for our family.
Mm-hmm. That's nice.
And if he'd said that a year ago, mm-hmm. they wouldn't even be here.
Probably never happened.
And we do wow. see that warmth between them. There was mm-hmm. a moment where I was like, mm-hmm. oh, finally a mm-hmm. glimmer of what might have been there mm-hmm. once.
Oh, yeah. Was, yeah, right.
Because we did question
mm-hmm.
the chemistry.
The whole time we were questioning, when the hell were these two ever together? Like, she must have gotten pregnant. That must have been what happened.
There was something, right?
There was real love there. There was a real mm-hmm. connection. But also, I felt like Francis thought that it was legitimate.
Mm-hmm.
The reason that he was coming there was legitimate. Right. You know, not like, I want to get
sure.
even. Right. right? And so she
right.
did that with the kiss, but I also think that was extremely confusing and not fair to him.
Right.
Because he's the one that's...
And I guess between the two, she would not have done that. She's not that... she would have not have been so premeditated. You can't see Francis doing that. She
oh, you're
come
saying
off
what
as,
he did.
Yeah.
Right, right, right.
Oh,
so
gotcha.
Between the two, like, who's Mr. Villain? Who's
yeah.
the worst
sure.
villain?
Sure.
It would have to be him, because she can be bumbly, mm-hmm. but she's not vindictive, and she
right.
doesn't do the premeditated
right.
stuff. This
right.
was a little odd out of character. Did you mm-hmm. kind of see this coming for the character of Robert?
Well, boy, Robert? What do I think about this? You never know what's going to happen when you start a war.
Mm-hmm.
You never know what's going to happen. And one thing leads to another, and it gains...
steam.
Yeah.
Momentum.
And you got to top the other thing. And neither one of them are villains. The lawyers are the villains.
Mm-hmm.
They
yeah.
both made
sure.
mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And the lawyers gave them a... real hard time.
Yeah. Yeah, they did.
No, I'd say they're two people who love each other.
Yeah.
That's
did
nice.
And will and do.
Yeah. Hmm. I'm really curious to see how this plays out in
yes.
season two.
Mm-hmm.
Do we
sure.
have any predictions? Anything that we might have heard about what will happen in the next season?
Your AfterBuzz TV predictions.
Robert?
Can you tell us anything?
What
all
say?
Good television shows never tell the end what's coming.
Right, that is true.
Well, I mean, I think the one thing that we could see is, and you know, in the light when we see, and we talked about this earlier about the kiss, it did seem like there was a glimmer of maybe,
mm-hmm.
you know, this can, you know, be done and they come back together. But obviously the name of the show is Divorce.
Yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
it has to continue.
Right.
And I think with the way it is now, with how it ended, mm-hmm. it's like the stakes are a lot more higher.
Yeah. They are
and
so much higher.
And it's going to be, and now with the kids, and I mean, it's just going to be interesting where it goes and how it goes from here. Yeah, I really hurt my heart.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I
hurt my heart when he did that. I'm like,
know.
Yo, are you serious? Mm-hmm. Like, really? And just, I mean, and just her reaction.
Yep.
Like you said, so visceral. Mm-hmm. She was just like, you really, really did it this time.
Yeah. The acting in this episode, like the mm-hmm. writing was incredible,
amazing.
But it really, mm-hmm. I felt like everyone had a stellar performance.
Right.
You know, just the shot on Sarah Jessica's face mm-hmm. at the end mm-hmm. of her, of like, you have done it. Because
right.
he's pushed and pushed and pushed and pushed.
Right.
And she's always like, oh, don't embarrass
yeah.
him. And
right.
I feel bad because I, you know.
Right.
Which is understandable, but she—that's that point of like, do not mess with Mama
mm-hmm.
Bear,
right.
right? Like, you do not mess with Mama Bear, and I feel like he messed.
Yeah,
he
yeah.
really, you know, putting mm-hmm. the kids in that situation But all of their performances.
Amazing.
Yeah. Really good.
And it's neat that they ended on the idea that he has crossed a line that cannot be crossed back, because we might not all know from relationships, from the realm of relationships, that can happen, where you feel like, okay, that's done. I can never talk to you again.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then you're, hey, how you doing?
You know, and the beauty of reality, right? They're maybe getting divorced, but they're a family,
right?
And so that's what I think this thing that he did, it was so damaging, because that's not a family thing to do.
Right.
So I think what Robert said earlier about a war will ensue. Mm-hmm. I think it will.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be funny and sad and true.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the way that this whole story was uncovered episode by episode, it's going to be a joy.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
I'm really excited.
I'm really excited, too.
I never in a million years thought I'd be so excited about a show.
I know.
For me, this show,
it was a slow burn. I didn't start off loving it.
I know.
You know, I always thought it was interesting and different, and it's really got me in. I was just the episode really did that. I was like, no, don't, stop.
Now we're all involved, and we really want to know what happens next.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Can you tell us if you're back for season two? Like, how many episodes?
I can't tell you that, but I can tell you that I am still her father.
Great. And always a stabilizing force whenever we see you on screen. The scenes.
Very much.
Well, I'm pulling for both of them.
I'm pulling
for the kids.
So what was it like working on this set, working with Sarah Jessica Parker?
Right.
Well, she wears a lot of hats. Right. She's the strength of this and the guiding force of this show. You got some really good producers and writers who are working with her to keep this thing in a direction that it can last 6 years or whatever number they got in their mind. I'm sure they have ideas for how this thing is going to go year by year. And she is wonderful. She's solid as can be.
Mm-hmm.
He is a funny guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I have remembered him from when he was on the airplane show.
Wings.
Quirky and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And he's also, he never gives you the same remark twice. So I don't know how many of those are written, but I do imagine, and I don't know this for sure, that some of his good lines over the episodes have been his own. I don't know
that's
who wrote.
Great. Sure.
Tongue dart your anus. But I said, did anybody say yes to that before? But that was that's when I knew this show was no joking around. It is going to be fun.
Mm. That's fantastic. I know you had some questions, Constance.
Well, I was interested in, this is just, you are originally from Rochester, New York.
Yes.
And I know that you were you went to the University of Rochester in the early 1960s football scholarship.
Okay, is that
accurate?
What? Everything on
Wikipedia
is not correct.
Okay.
No, I did not go on a football scholarship. I started at Heidelberg College in Ohio,
and
I did play football there. Then I played football at Alfred University. Then I changed to the University of Rochester. By then, my football days were over, and so I graduated from the University of Rochester, and that was where I, on the first day of my senior year, pulled into a parking spot, and in front of my car walked a beautiful brunette.
Wow.
She was wearing a black London Fog raincoat and high heels. I was struck by lightning. I leaped out of the car. I followed the girl. I was trying to think of something to say. She walks into the auditorium. They're doing an audition for Bye Bye Birdie.
Wow.
I had never seen the play, and I had never seen the movie, but I had seen the trailer to the movie, and I knew it was about a guy with a gold suit who does a parody of Elvis Presley.
Mm-hmm.
I said, that's how I'm going to meet the girl. I'm going to audition for the part of the guy with the gold suit.
Wow.
They didn't give me the part of the guy with the gold suit. They put me in the chorus. I said, nah, forget this. I don't want to be in the chorus. But I said, well, how about the girl, Bob? You'll meet the girl if you stick. I did stick. I met the girl. I married the girl. We have three daughters.
Oh, isn't that odd?
It's awesome.
Cool. It's listen, you know what the first three rules of real estate are.
Location, location, location.
And the first three rules of love are proximity, proximity, proximity. You fall in love with who you, and in the old days before there were movies and pictures, you could only fall in love with someone you were close enough to.
Right.
So where does that get us? I chased June into the auditorium, and that's how I became an actor.
That's an amazing story.
It's a really great story.
Because I read you were going to study law, right?
Yes.
And
for no good reason.
You made the right decision.
For no good reason. Oh, oh, there's nothing better than what I do. I can only say that, and this is the truth. Anything I've ever accomplished has been accomplished through fakery. Yes, if you tell somebody you're a trombone player, they say, take out your accents, let's see what you got. Mm-hmm. If you tell them you're a magician, they say, show me a trick. If you tell them you're an actor, nobody says, no, you're not.
Right.
So when they say, can you do this? Can you ride a horse or something? Or you name it? Mm-hmm. Yes, of course I can. Mm-hmm. Yes, let's go.
Yep. Huh. You gave me some really great advice when we had our impromptu breakfast about that you give to new actors, right?
What do I give?
Essentially, it was the first three steps, advice. It was that story. I don't know if you'd be willing to share the whole thing or at least run through sort of accept things as they are is number one.
Oh, indeed. It was, listen, my career was at the very worst it could be. I had a 5-year first act to my career and a 27-year second act to my career, and I'm at the very bottom. And I've stopped being a runner. Now I've picked up a tennis racket just to keep physical. And I'm walking into the park at the Plummer Park on off Fountain. Mm. And I am asking myself whether I'm going to have to quit being an actor because I have 4 children, 2 ex-wives. I've got to save the house. I got to get them through college. Yeah. I am failing as an actor. And am I going to have to change my living? Am I going to have to change what I do for a living? And as I'm walking in, I see old Joe Stein over there gently hitting the ball against the wall, waiting for me. He's 79 years old, Joe Stein. And I saw Joe Stein over there, and I said to myself, no, Bob, don't quit. Joe Stein, who is still a psychiatrist, has patients, is writing books, and can beat me at tennis. He could get the ball anywhere on the court he wanted to. All I had to do was get it back to him. And I said, Joe Stein never quits. That's the answer. You don't quit. You can win it in the late innings, Bob, if you don't quit. Wow. And then I said the next obvious question, but how do you get from the hole you're in to winning it in the late innings? And that's when I said to myself, and it came to me just like that, you deliver the best you can right now. This is the only moment you have any effect over. This is the only moment you can be effective. And you can deliver your best. And if you do right now, deliver the best you got, you get what they always tell you. You're going to get that reward of self-respect, the reward of satisfaction. When you deliver your excellent best right now, and when I say excellence, of course, I don't mean perfection. Mm-hmm. Perfection is a sure loser. Mm-hmm. But if you deliver your excellent best right now, you get the best future you've got coming. And that is not the end of it. Prior to that, you say to yourself, but how about that good attitude they tell you you've got to have in order to deliver your excellent best? Because if you're holding on to negative stuff, you cannot deliver your excellent best. So, accept all things. It doesn't matter that you're not getting the good jobs anymore, Bob. Once you accept it, your shoulders relax. That's it. Do not worry that you're not getting the Winnebago anymore, Bob. Do not worry that she doesn't love you anymore, Bob. Once you realize that it's over and you cannot be holding on to negative stuff, because if you do, you cannot deliver your excellent best. So, step one, accept all things. That gives you a good attitude. Step two, deliver your very best right now. That gives you the best shot at the best future you got coming. And never quit. You can win it in the late innings if you never quit. It's not over till it's over, but then it's really over.
Unbelievable. Really, I'm so glad that we got that on tape, to be honest, because all of us, you know, are looking for mentors and guidance, and you know, navigating the entertainment industry is tough on anyone. You have to be a little crazy.
Sure.
Or a lot of crazy to be here doing the things that we do. And that kind of advice, I think, goes a long way, not just for us, but like folks at home too. So thank you.
And someone who's been there.
Yep.
You know, someone who's done, I don't know if and I hope it's there's an interesting part of your career early on where you had done a lot of theater and you had gone back to Rochester, if that's correct, and you were doing construction, you were doing some other things. Is that accurate?
Yeah, somewhat. Right. Well, I went to New York with a notion, no plan, and I didn't have a clue. But after I graduated from the University of Rochester, I did a play with the community theater, and then I did a couple of 4 weeks with the Rochester Rochester Summer Theater, and then I went to New York City without a plan and without a clue. I did not know that there were this many of us and this many jobs. I hadn't a clue. And so I hung around New York and went back to Rochester. I had a degree. I was a substitute teacher. For a day's worth of substituting was $26.50 a day. With a couple of days of that, you could go back to New York for a couple of weeks.
Wow.
I rented a room up on the Upper West Side for $9 or $10 or $11 or whenever I came back, I rented a new room. Where am I going with this?
Back and forth.
Back
and
forth,
down,
yes. And then, and then after I'd gotten my first job, Reflection, while I, then I got a job. I met a girl who asked me to do a scene with her for her class. I did the scene with her for her class. She said, then let's do it for an agent. I did it for the agent. After the scene was over, she talked to these four agents. One of them came over to me and said, are you represented? I said, no, I'm not. He said, I'd like to send you on an interview. I went on the interview. I got a reading for the play. I get the reading for this play, a two-character play on Broadway called Mrs. Dalley Has a Lover, 1965. My first job is in a two-character play on Broadway. How lucky can a guy get who really has no... has no skills. These are no skill. All I did was convince them that I was, capable of standing on that stage and delivering. So it's all fakery. And until you get to know what you're doing, it's continues to be fakery. And every single time you say, "Can I? What am I going to toss at him this time?" And in general, just going back to the original of this show, you bring him yourself.
Right.
And who you've made yourself into.
Right.
And that's the first place to start for me as an actor.
And just a little classic Hollywood gossip. Is there any tidbits? You, of course, 2 years later, in 1967, you'd be in Reflections in a Golden Eye with Marlon Brando and Elizabeth Taylor.
Yes.
Anything you'd like to share? Were they nice to you on set? Anything wacky and wild and crazy that you remember? Fabulous lessons?
I have a great lesson. I'm not sure you have the time for this. John Huston's first advice to me on what you do in front of a camera. I'll start it and I'll try to be brief. But I meet him in a hotel room, I tell him, "Look, I've never done a movie. I don't know what the tricks are." I said, "But if you hire me, I'll give you your money's worth." He believes me, apparently, and calls in the producer, Ray Stark, a big producer. He says, "Ray, I want you to meet an actor." And I'm thinking, who is this guy? I told him I only did it once. I only was on Broadway once. I only did one play. He says, "You'll be hearing from us." I expected that was the end of it. I go home. I fly home to Rochester. I get off the plane to see my father. On my way back out here, my father says, "Quick, call your agents. They just made a deal." I had no idea they operated just like that.
Wow.
About 2 weeks later, he comes out here to a few days later. I'm on the phone with him. The agents arrange a telephone call between me and this John Huston. I say, "I thank you very much for hiring me, and I appreciate it very much." I said, "But do you remember I told you I never did a movie?" He says, "I remember." I said, "Well, and reading my mind, he says, I'll give you some instruction." Great, the guy's going to tell me how to do it. I meet him again. We're doing wardrobing at Western Costume, which is now where Paramount is. They tore it down. They put it out in the valley somewhere. I go straight to Huston. I say, "Yeah, you said you had some instructions for me. What are they?" And he says, "But not yet, Bobby." Okay. He's the boss. Maybe he's going to take me on a set. Maybe he's going to take me to lunch. Who knows? Days go by. Days turn into weeks. Nobody calls. Weeks turn into months, during which time Montgomery Clift, who was scheduled to do the role, dies and has to be replaced by Marlon Brando. This takes some months. Eventually, I get the call. I meet him on Long Island 3 days ahead of shooting. I go straight to Huston. I say, "Hey, look, all summer long, I've expected you to, you know, tell me what these what are these instructions you've got for me?" And he says, "But not yet, Bobby." Now it's the night before we're going to work, And everybody at a long table, the cast and crew, Elizabeth Taylor is not there, Marlon Brando not there, but everybody else, and John Huston sitting right here, and I lean over to him and I say, don't you think now is the time to give me these instructions? He says, tomorrow morning. Finally, on the first morning of production, I get out of the car. He says, go take a look through the lens. I walk over to the camera. The cameraman steps aside. I look through the lens. I turn back to Huston. He says, you see those? Those are the frame lines. I look again. I say, you mean that line that shows the cameraman with the audience? He says, those are the frame lines. Now, ask yourself this. What needs to be there?
Wow.
He didn't tell me that I was going to have to do the detective work to figure out why I was in the scene. The writer clearly wrote the scene so that I would deliver something that the writer needs. Mm. He didn't tell me that I was going to have to do that, and so that when we get to this little fraction of what we're shooting right now, I deliver what was needed from the writer. He didn't tell me that the director was going to have a shot and that I was going to have to do some traveling or put the cup somewhere or do some dialogue. He didn't tell me what the director was going to need from me. He didn't tell me that. He didn't tell me that the guy who set the lights wants me to be in them. And the one listening for the words got to hear them right. Otherwise, somebody at the end of the shots is no good for sound.
Right.
He didn't tell me that the one behind the lens was going to say no good for composition if I was too big for the shot I'm in. Or if I put the cup down in the wrong spot, somebody says, no good for continuity, start again. Everybody on that set is your boss. Mm-hmm. Everybody needs something from you. Mm-hmm. Everybody wants their thing to be correct, and that isn't the end of it. The other actor may have to do this emotionally in a scene. My job to build them a little ramp so that the other actor can do this emotionally in a scene.
Wow.
And for myself, I want myself to fall as simply as a pair of glasses falling on the floor, as simple as physics require. No more, no less. Real, authentic, believable. Just as simple as can be. And for the one who is cutting this movie together, I've got to be aware of the downs and the ups of the roller coaster car that we're trying to build. We're trying to build a roller coaster track so that our audience can have some fun with it. And I've got to be understand the downs and the ups so that I can contribute to the downs and the ups. And for the audience, we want them to be with us at the end of the ride. Mm-hmm. We got them in a car, and we got to be believable going around those curves. If we're not believable, they won't be with us. Mm-hmm. And for the one who hired me, it's my job to be ready on that first, second take so that I can help them get their schedule done. You owe something to everybody on that set. Mm. It is one of the great jobs of all times. And though I am delighted to say it sounds complex, there's many actors I know who I would not trust with a grocery list, I include myself, who can do that 8 days a week. It is not that hard to create an action which advantages everybody at once, and that's what you can do on a lifetime basis every day with every action you create. And when you do, you are delivering something which will give you that reward of self-respect and satisfaction.
On that note, oh my gosh, Robert, thank you so much for sharing with us.
Yeah.
We do have to wrap, so thank you so much, everyone at home. My name's Oriana Leo. You can find me on Twitter at Miss Oriana Leo, and check out my website, Tilt by Oriana, and sign up for the 30-day challenge in January.
Yes, well worth it. I am in the middle of doing it, and it's awesome. Constance Dunn here. You can check me out at Instagram and Twitter, Constance Dunn.
I'm doing Tilt, too. Highly recommend. Two thumbs up. This is Fern Rone. You can find me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat at Fern Rone, and my website, fernrone.com.
And I'm going to find out about Tilt, because I want to do it, too. but you can find me at The Poet Saint all day, every day. And you can check my website, stayonthemic.com.
Awesome. And Robert, can we find you anywhere on the social medias?
I'm afraid you can't. Okay. I try to stay off that as
well. We just look for your face anywhere we can. Mm-hmm. Do you have any upcoming projects?
Yes, David Lynch's Twin Peaks, which is being resurrected after 25 years.
Congratulations.
Looks to be a great series this spring.
Awesome. Yes. Fantastic. We might have to just cover it here on AfterBuzz TV. Mm-hmm. Thanks for joining us. Thank you to our special guest. And thanks for having fun with divorce, believe it or not. Yeah. Until next season. Bye, guys. Bye.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other After shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.